We start today's program with Republican Arizona Congressman David Schweikert, who represents the state's 6th District. Recently on Here and Now, I spoke with Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego about his concerns about the incoming Trump administration. And this morning, we'll get Schweikert's perspectives. He's a co-founder of the House Freedom Caucus, and he easily won re-election last month. He's here with his 14-month-old daughter, Olivia, whom you may hear on occasion in the background. Congressman, as a member of the House Freedom Caucus, are you looking forward to working with the president-elect? And what issues do you think you can connect on, and which of those could be problematic?
Look, the House Freedom Caucus, in some ways, I think there's been a lot of marginal to bad information. It was substantially an organization that was put together for reform. How do you, as a conservative, have, or those of us who are more free market, you know, bordering on conservative libertarian, have access to the floor of the House to offer amendments? Remember, conversations we had in the past is we were functionally frozen out. Yeah. But so were the most liberal members of Congress. So were the, you know, freshmen were frozen out. So in many ways, the reforms we fought for were a lot more than just, hey, there's this group of 40 conservatives. It was a more egalitarian, give us access to legislate and be part of the process. Mm-hmm. Now the House Freedom Caucus is going to have to step up. And no longer being sort of the blocking minority within the majority, and start showing up with robust, intellectually credible pieces of legislation. No more talking.
Right.
So if you're concerned about the collapse of the trust funds, you know, whether it be Medicare, whether it be Social Security, show up with solutions. Many of us who've been looking for market data solutions for environmental protection, are we able to show up with pieces of legislation and say, here's our reforms, hear us?
Is it fair to call you a deficit hawk?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Very much so.
So let me ask specifically then about the infrastructure situation, because I don't know what percentage of people in Congress agree that infrastructure is a concern, but many members of Congress are concerned that that would also lead to a lot of spending when we're already in a major deficit. Do you expect to butt heads at all with the president or his cabinet over that, if he sees that as a job growth mechanism?
Well, look, the job growth mechanism is sort of a classic Keynesian approach. And, you know, we actually have now several years of great data to look at, you know, the stimulus and other things and what happened in those cycles. And I know there'll be people writing their PhD thesis on why didn't it work? Why didn't the numbers match what the predictions? My approach, and one of the things we've been working on, is how do I fund infrastructure that's required, that's important for economic growth, and do it in a fashion where I've used assets, streams of income, even though I'm going to probably have to bond them so I get the spike of money, instead of going into deficit spending? And, you know, some of this is going to mean having to have discussions about natural gas extraction on public lands. Mm-hmm. Could I take part of that lease value, if it's a 20-year lease, and bond it and use those dollars for infrastructure? So in some ways, part of it is really a debate of how do I fund it? How do I build a financing model and build a what we would refer to as a capital stack that doesn't functionally blow up the deficit?
So there's the question, which is more philosophical, which is, do you have optimism that that will be a priority? And I ask it because there was talk when President George W. Bush was in office that spending, with Republicans controlling both houses for a short time, that spending went up as Republicans would say Democrats would do. So are you concerned this could be the same pattern this time?
Very much so. And please understand, if you actually look at a couple of the top advisors in the Trump transition team, they're much more almost classical Keynesians in their view of the world. So this has been one of the fascinating, look, it's hard winning and losing, and the emotions that could come up and down, and then the letdowns and sometimes the disappointments. But some of the crazy things I've read in the press of the of Donald Trump, I need you to take a look at the appointments that are there. I'll use Mick Mulvaney for OMB, one of the most powerful positions in all of government. People don't realize they are the ultimate gatekeeper from spending to rules and regs. Mick Mulvaney is a deficit hawk. He's brilliant. He's just incredibly smart. He's also very creative. He's technically, I won't say he's like, he's not a techno-utopian where he thinks technology solves everything. That's more me. But even right now, just as we've been talking, he just texted me about the calculations on different asset classes that we hold in the federal government that could be either pledged or bonded to actually finance part of that infrastructure. So these ideas have a home in some of the people getting appointed.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Arizona 6th District Congressman David Schweikert and family. You may have heard Olivia, his young daughter, in the background.
Yes, you're actually very bold.
So, Congressman, let's look at some of the ideas that you are specifically focused on. Because earlier this week, Washington Post published a list based on what the House Freedom Caucus, some of the priorities that they might have for a Trump administration. Environment came up. But I'm wondering, when you think about the environment, how does that manifest itself to still have the protections that a pretty good percentage of this country would like, while also realizing that there are some regulations that could go away? How does that balance itself?
Well, there's been a frustrating fixation on all the regulations. And how do I turn the model upside down and saying the fixation has to be, how do I have clean air for my community? And this is true with sound and water and soil, everything else. And I am a huge fan of a concept that says the way we regulate business, point source emitters today, functionally having them fill out lots and lots of pieces of paper, you know, quarterly, annually, major audits annually, filling up file cabinets full of paper. Do file cabinets full of paper make the air quality better in Maricopa County? And I know that's an absurd way to say it, but that's sort of the regulatory model we have. It's almost sort of a 1930s model. We're all walking around with these supercomputers in our pocket, you know, the smartphones. And there's a new category of sensors that are starting to come onto the market now. Some do volatile organics, some do CO2, some do ozone, some do PM10 particulates. How about the concept that for Maricopa County, we try to find 1,000 or a couple thousand of our friends and neighbors who are out in the community every day with the sensor attached to their phone. Let's put up the GIS map and let's crowdsource what's happening in our air quality marketplace, as we'll call it. And if we find a sin, we go directly to the point source and fix it right then. Think of the change in the lag time between something that's bad going into our environment and the ability to show up and fix it. So instead of a world right now where we fill up file cabinets and we have a handful of fixed sensors that sort of give you a regional number, a crowdsource model, you can get down to the exact spot that the sin is happening. Is that conservative? Is that liberal? It's sort of marketplace crowdsourcing. Hits citizen science, and the incentive for a community to adopt it is our businesses could do dramatically less paperwork, and you only catch the sinners. And those that are good actors in your community get the benefit of being left alone.
Now, this is an exaggeration, but a lot of people saw images earlier this week from Beijing. And I don't think anyone is saying any U.S. city is going to be like that, but they're thinking, well, that's a place that's growing, its economy is growing. Mm-hmm. And they have decided that clean air regulation isn't that important. Do you have any fears, though, that it's going to move closer to that direction? Do people that you may disagree with on most issues have any point to say, well, maybe we're overregulated, but please don't underregulate us either?
Yeah, and I think actually there becomes the philosophical wedge, and that is the goal's clean air. It's not another regulation. It's not another handful of lawyers and engineers filling out paperwork and waiting to see if there's a mistake so we can go find the paperwork and sue you. It's how do I keep my air clean and keep it clean all the time, not have a delay of finding out saying, hey, for 6 weeks I had this horrible emitter in this part of my community. I want to catch it the moment it happens. And that's why I believe actually the crowdsourcing of environmental data. We all use things like Weather Underground to actually even study down to our microclimates within the valley. Why wouldn't that same sort of modeling work if I could get, you know, 1,000 people with sensors traveling around and they're providing me a data point every 5 minutes? You functionally have millions of data points a week.
I think it's fair to say you're a policy wonk. And I don't know that the average person thinks that there are a lot of policy wonks in Congress. I think they think you may be in the distinct minority.
Yeah, there's a reason I Yeah, sometimes get myself in trouble when you run down and say, there's a different way to do it. And then you realize they have no idea what you just explained.
So the House Freedom Caucus, at least at the end, not big fans of John Boehner. How do you feel about Paul Ryan? Do you think he's going to hear you but also be someone you can work with?
I have had more success with Speaker Ryan in the last year of at least having an audience for some of the ideas. Mm-hmm. I have a fixation on blockchain and smart contracts and the efficiencies that can bring to the economy, but also this crazy concept that we're working on the legislation mm-hmm. that every American should own their own data. And in a societal contract, you lease parts of it to government to be able to sort of see. You know, so if you're getting a special pass at the TSA or your IRS records or you want a security clearance, the ability to log in and say, I can see everyone in government who's looked at me. And in a blockchain type environment, I can make it incredibly secure and so incredibly safe. And I think there's some ways like that, because believe it or not, within that model, I can remove tremendous amount of fraud at the IRS, tremendous amounts of fraud in other functions of government. So there are these technologies that have rolled out around us the last few years, and it's been heartbreaking, frustrating to try to find audiences with it, whether it be the current administration or a lot of my brothers and sisters in Congress. And this is where I have some new optimism, is some of the people like the Mick Mulvaneys of the world who are moving into the administration are very open to solutions that are not typical partisan pablum.
Arizona's 6th District Congressman, David Schweikert. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Thanks for being here.
You're very kind. Thank you for letting me bring my little person in. You know, come January, the schedule for the next 6 months is a lot of time in D.C., you know, and a lot of responsibility to get work done. And so I'm grabbing every second I can with my little girl.